Hello, and welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharakana. We invite you to join us on Thursdays at 8 p.m. for an engaging exchange with us and our special guest as we cover various topics regarding history, genealogy, and your personal family history stories. Hello, I'm Janice Gilliard.
And I'm Sharakana Feliciano. Welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharakana. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Today, we are joined by our guest, Dee Patterson.
Dee Patterson, also known as Conductor Dee, is the CEO and founder of UGR 3-Day Underground Railroad Experiences, Inc. She is also an acclaimed storyteller and conductor of the Underground Railroad Experiences. A historian, Dee is also a nationally certified cultural interpretive guide, a certified genealogist, curriculum developer, and education consultant. She brings her research-based narratives, poetic storytelling, and creative energy to each UGR 3-day experience. Welcome to Speak On It, Dee.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Thank you for being here with us. So, Dee, for our listeners that may not be familiar with UGR 3-day, can you please describe what your organization is about? And what was a catalyst that led you to create UGR 3-Day?
Absolutely. So UGR 3-Day is an organization that educates on the Underground Railroad. And we do that through walks, through cycling, seminars, workshops, and of course, Instagram and Facebook posts. But the funny thing is, I thought that UGR 3-Day was going to be a one-time birthday celebration. And the year before the actual event, I was training for a marathon and was looking for somewhere new to run. And I came across the Harriet Tubman Byway and I was intrigued. So I said to my sister friend who I trained with, hey, I've got this great place for us to run. And then I realized, this is like over 100 miles. So we're not getting ready to do that one. And so, we went ahead and did our race, and I just couldn't seem to shake that desire to connect with the underground. So fast forward to the spring, I said, hey, what if we split it up over 3 days and we walk, not run, and just, you know, do like maybe half of it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if it weren't for Rashida Washington, I probably may or may not even have UGR, because she said, yeah, let's do it. And so that was all I needed. And so we have a good sister circle of what we call our sister friends, and 12 of us are runners. And so when I mentioned it to them, of course, and tied in history, they were all in. Wow. And so that's kind of how, you know, it began. I spent the next 8 months researching, developing, planning, and that was our first 3-day.
It's a testament to the power of being around people who support you and like-minded folks. So
absolutely.
From your Facebook posts, we can see that you are very passionate about UGR 3-Day and educating people that visit your page. Personally, what inspires you to share so many informative posts?
So we're in a historic deficit when it comes to Black history. And absolutely, even within the narratives that we do know, there's so many missing components that we don't even really see the picture for what it really is. So the creativity, the intellect, the boldness that went into planning escapes, the disguises, the strategies, the tricks, and I could go on and on, hiding places. It takes us from looking at freedom seekers as simply, quote, a slave, to a human. Mm-hmm. And not just a human, but a mom, a dad, a businessman, an artist. And the extensive network of not just Black people, but Quakers, indigenous people. Mm-hmm. There were enslaved Black people who worked on the Underground Railroad too. So, but with all this diversity, in spite of different socioeconomic backgrounds, the resource imbalances, differences of faith, they were still able to come together for a common cause. Huh. And that cause was freedom. So, I feel like they created a framework for what community really is. And we can learn something from that today.
Absolutely.
So we love history and genealogy. And we know there are so many stories that we may never know about regarding the Underground Railroad. But in your research, what are one or two stories that stand out for you?
Oh, it's so hard to just pick one or two. But this one, I think, will blow your mind. The man's name was Theophilus Collins, and he was from Sussex County, which is the southern part of Delaware.
Okay.
And this man decided that he was going to go to church. And his, you know, it, at this time, just a little background for anyone who may not know, enslaved people were not free to worship whenever they wanted to or whomever they wanted to. And so that was considered to be a crime that he went to church. Wow. So when he returned, he was brutally massacred. Like, this man went completely ballistic, what? Breaking things over his head, snapping a broom on his body, like just beating after beating. But the worst part was when he took a knife and sliced open his stomach, ooh, causing his intestines to come out.
Oh my God.
Partially. Theophilus didn't say, okay, I'm going to just go back to my cabin and I'm just going to try to pull myself together. He ran for over a half marathon,
what?
Holding his intestines in his hand.
Ooh.
And he made it to a safe place where an elder Black woman who was had knowledge on different herbal treatments and things, she cared for him. And they also brought in a doctor to care for him. And after a couple of days, Theophilus kept it moving and went on to freedom.
Wow.
That's do you have one more?
That is,
I do.
Wow.
So I'll tell you about Rachel Harris. Rachel mm-hmm. Harris was from, well, she was from Elkton, Maryland, mm-hmm. and she traveled to Chester County. And the reason for the timing of her departure was that the very next day she was scheduled to be free, but her children would have remained enslaved. Mm. And so she was like, I'm not leaving my babies, you know, and some people did. Some people did have felt like they needed to leave. So she had an infant who she's holding in her hands. She has, I think if she had 5 or 6 children, and this huge, just to conceptualize, it's already illegal and dangerous for one person. But then when you've got a crowd, that draws even more attention. So
right.
The fact that she was able to travel undetected really speaks to how stealthy she was.
Mm-hmm.
And the conditions were absolutely horrific for her journey because the rain, it was like a rainstorm. And so it was so heavy that the pelting of the rain was causing the tow fabric, which was what her enslaved people's clothes at her plantation and most others were made of, which was like that coffee sack material, rough, itchy, thin. That's what they're wearing. And this rain was so fierce that it began to rip her skin off to the point where by the time she arrived to her safe house in Pennsylvania, she had no skin left on her arm, but she's still carrying her baby and all of her children to freedom. So it just like blows my mind how the amount of determination and ability to overcome, it's like no excuses, we're getting this done.
Right. The resilience is what comes to mind. They survived and they were resilient. Dee, a participant absolutely. On one of your tours posted the following on your Facebook page, which I thought was really, it just made me want to take a tour like tomorrow. She says, this was an experience of a lifetime. Conductor Dee took the passengers through various places where Harriet Tubman was once, with details that allowed us to imagine, appreciate, and be hopeful about tomorrow. I am so grateful to have been a part of this movement of retracing our steps, our ancestors' steps, that paved the way for women to be the true leaders that we are. I am changed for the better. I want to encourage everyone to seize the next opportunity to experience it for themselves. This is by far one of the most well-executed history lessons. And so my question after reading that response to one of your tours was, how do most participants respond, or do the tours impact them emotionally? I know, like, I've been to, there are still slave cabins that exist at Francis Marion University, and I've been there, and it just changed me, you know, to read about, you know, my ancestors and slave narratives. And like I share with you, finding out about my fifth great grandmother being sold out of Charleston, it moves me. I have a range of emotions, from crying to being happy to finding out the information, then angry, and then thankful that all of my ancestors were so resilient. Based on the tours that you give, do you find that people have emotional responses? Do they cry? Are they angry? Or do they want to learn more? Can you share some of that with us and our listeners?
Sure. So I knew from the beginning that I wanted UGR to be more than just a walk. I wanted to create a space where people could connect with the stories through the food we eat, to the songs we sing, to the steps we retrace, because connection is powerful. So when people have that connection and they begin to experience UGR 3-Day, it is an extremely emotional experience. So you have some people who cry, some people get angry, and this is both races. They get angry and they'll want to verbalize their anger, and it's a safe place to do that. Other people may just kind of go into themselves and mull over for the next couple of miles their thoughts. Some of the longer walks, people get tired and hungry and eager to finish. And so that brings about emotion. And in that moment, we all have to make a decision. Are we going to either dig deep and press on, or we can Uber out of there? And so far, nobody has given up.
That's excellent. Yeah, I have done the slave tour, the slave castle in Elmina in Ghana, and wow. It's all kinds of emotions. It's a mix of, it's solemn. It's like, wow, this is the first time that my family tree is like back on the continent. I can't really describe it, but I can imagine, you know, being in an Underground Railroad spot. It's just, I've done, there's a spot also in Southern Jersey, because Jersey had a very robust Underground Railroad system. And it's the same thing. It's like, there's just this solemn feeling that comes over you and a quiet. And I can see how some people might also cry. You know, so these spaces, they hold a lot of energy, and, you know, there's no telling, you know, how it might impact a person. So, that's really, really great that you shared that with us. On your website, we noted that Delaware State University is hosting you, Conductor D, for Stories from the Underground. Can you share some of the highlights that you'll share? And also, if you could share one or two upcoming events that you were hosting.
Sure. So I'm super excited about sharing stories from the underground at my alma mater, DSU. Right. The first three Thursdays in February, I'll be talking about people who disguised themselves and where they hid on the way to freedom. I'll share specific landmarks that people can go to within Kent County, Delaware, that were hideaways and portals to freedom. And then the final week, I'm spilling all the midnight tea, and we're going to talk about the 1800s Uber to Harriet Tubman's side hustle. moving ahead a little bit to celebrate Harriet Tubman Day on March the 12th, we'll be doing a 3-mile walk in Delaware City, visit three landmarks. And we're just encouraging everyone to go to UGR3day.com, get your We Out shirt, and join us on the pavement.
I love it.
Well, before we move on to the next question, you've mentioned disguises quite a bit. And I'm just interested, is there one that you can share with our listeners?
Sure.
That an enslaved person on the Underground Railroad may have used?
Yeah, so here's a quick one I really love to tell. Harriet Tubman's brother, when she was going back to get them, mm-hmm. he knew that he wanted to bring this woman that he wanted to marry. Mm-hmm. And her enslaver had already said, no, you're not going to take her. She's staying here with, you're not going to be able to marry her. Mm-hmm. So, but he just was like thinking to himself, I have to come up with another plan. So he put a man's suit inside of a suitcase and hid it in the garden by where she worked. And he said, when I give you the signal, I want you to go and open it up and there's going to be something in there for you. So that's what she did. And she put on the man's suit and pulled her hair back and everything. And of course the enslaver was like, have y'all seen Jane? Nobody's seen Jane. And they're like, we haven't seen Jane. We just saw some strange man walking across the field.
Yeah.
Wow.
I love it.
Okay,
our people.
Yes.
They're very creative.
Mm-hmm.
Very
creative.
Another question for you, Dee. Have you researched your family history? And if so, can you share a little of what you have discovered? And has it had an impact on what you are doing with UGR 3-Day?
I have researched my family history extensively. And I've been able to trace back several branches of my tree 230 years. Wow. So in the process, I've been able to visit a few plantations, a couple of ports where they came in. One was Charleston, South Carolina, which was very common. Most people came in that way. And then also Richmond, Virginia. But no matter how many plantations or ports I visit, it never gets easier. It's just like that weight of the reality of what you know happened there.
Yeah.
You know, is just something that I continue to like try to articulate.
Mm-hmm.
But one story I will share with you, and I had shared this on Instagram at UGR 3-Day, that on my maternal side of the family, we were always told that my great grandmother was a Powhatan Native American. And we believed it. We had no reason to believe otherwise because she had the long hair down to her waist, the high cheekbones, the light skin, all of her siblings and family on that side of the family, they were unusually light.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, but the funny thing was I went and got the DNA test and there was no indigenous DNA. And I was like, this thing is wrong. I'm logging out of this account. And so I did that for like 2 years. And then when I started getting into genealogy and researching my family, I said, take your time and go through this and find out what the true narrative is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started pulling census records and looking at death certificates and, you know, doing what we do in genealogy. And I found my great grandmother's mother, who was enslaved. And the same year, she was enslaved in Powhatan, Virginia.
Ah, okay.
And the same year that my great grandmother, my great great grandmother was born, her mother passed away, and it's just noted as cause of death unknown, which of course is like, you know, an imagination starter.
Right, right.
So when I found her biological father, his name was so common that I was able to find a picture of him. So I was in Virginia archives. So I was just like so excited. My daughter's into history also. So I put the setup on the table and we're getting ready to see my third great grandfather. And when the picture came up, I almost inhaled the whole table.
Oh my God.
His rosy cheeks and his white skin. What? Wait, what? Okay, so now I'm really just trying to put it all together. This really didn't happen. Most of us know as African Americans that somewhere along the line, we have some Caucasian in us.
Right.
But it's a totally different experience when you are looking visually at your family tree and there are people that you know that are linked to the story of horror.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically what happened was she was raised as an orphan. My great-great-grandmother was raised as an orphan because her mother passed away the year she was born and her father was her enslaver.
Wow.
And so I did see that the census report, after the Civil War, she's still listed as a, quote, house servant. But being that he was a Confederate soldier in the Civil War, mm-hmm. I am most certain that she was not treated as a house servant. She was probably treated as an enslaved person. And then, of course, with more research, I found that it was very common for enslavers to tell their children that they were, quote, Indian.
And interesting.
So that, right.
That's where it came from.
That's where it came
that's
from.
That's very big in South Carolina, where I'm from, where I spoke with a professional researcher there, and she said on both sides, both Black and white, a lot of times they will claim Native ancestry because they don't want to address the truth. I wrote down, you said the true narrative of, yes, you know, you're this person or the slave owner, plantation owner, overseer, they slept with an enslaved person. Mm-hmm. In my research, all of this one particular line of my family, they're all buried in this particular cemetery, and the slave owner, the slave master or enslaver is signing off on all of the death certificates.
Oh,
and
wow.
then sold land to my second great grandfather, 150 acres of land for $1.50. You know,
yeah.
That's saying something that there's a relationship sure. there. So mm-hmm. I totally agree, you know, where you said correcting the narrative or fleshing out what you don't know, you're thinking one thing. And then in some instances, you do find Native ancestry. In our family, they kept saying right. it for a long time. I couldn't find it. I've been researching for 25 years and could not find it. And a DNA test connected me to my third great grandfather. And it turned out that he was Native. And it goes, wow. I mean, I have documentation for it and everything. So sometimes it isn't true. Sometimes it is.
Right.
And my position is that you have to be prepared when you take a DNA test and when you're doing the research to embrace whatever you find, seek to understand it. And then if something needs to be corrected, correct it, because it doesn't make any sense to have a false narrative continuing forever and the truth not being revealed. So
exactly.
It happens. It can Absolutely. Happen.
Yeah. I mean, and it's also important to put things into context, because I remember I was trying to do a little bit of research and writing on an ancestor of mine, that this is the line where the whole, you know, we got Indian in our family started to come from. And I, you know, like in your situation, he's, you know, mixed race. And I try to put myself in their shoes, because, and in your case, your ancestor's orphaned, right? They had no reason to really, you know, she had no reason to argue with that and dispute that, because
right.
here you visibly look different from, you know, perhaps your fully Black side. You have like this white side that probably isn't embracing you like the way they should as family, and they're treating you like from a distance and like property. So it is kind of like, you know, what is the next, I guess, ideal or next best thing to say, I put that in air quotes, you're Native. And it's like, okay. And if you have someone who is controlling his documentation, or you have, like in your situation, your ancestor, her mother is deceased, there's no one to check it and to push back on it. So, you know, you can see how these stories come into play. And I did not know that sometimes the enslaver was the one who said, oh, you're Native. And it makes sense, because it's how you keep the suspicion off.
That's right. You're not going to put me out there.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
But so it's like, DNA is changing all of that. All
yes,
of that.
It is.
All of it. And sure especially when you have the paper trail.
Mm-hmm.
You have the paper trail. So it's accepting it, dealing with it, putting all of the pieces together as far as your, you know, your paper trail, the DNA, and I don't like applying this term to this, but it is what it is. Let's deal with it and move forward.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And so one of the things for me, once I got over the initial shock of, okay, this is the situation, because it takes a minute for it to soak in. And mm-hmm. it's not because I want to be one way and don't want to be another. It's just so the reality of knowing exactly what happened to your family member is so difficult, especially yeah. when you search that. Because there are things that you know that are, you know, on a deeper level. But I began to think about, you know, she could have, my third great grandmother could have, because she lived a life of trauma, she could have created a legacy of trauma. But instead, she intentionally created a legacy of love. And I thought about all the things that have been passed down through my maternal line that demonstrate that power. And I give it to my family. And it made me just feel so overwhelmingly proud of her resilience and her determination to be this person and not that person.
Right, right. I love it. Can we say her name? What was your ancestor's name?
Her name was Emma Gilliam.
Emma Gilliam.
And we will talk after this segment.
You know, we try to put our, you know, say their names when we can. So
yeah.
Can you please tell us about the UGR 3-day 52 mile walk? This is exciting stuff. Yes.
Oh, the 52 mile walk was the very first UGR event. And so, of course, it's near and dear to my heart. I did it with 11 of my sister friends. We trained for 8 months to prepare for the 3 days on a very cold weekend in November of 2019. And so we walked about 20 miles each day. And we started out just as the sun was rising and usually finished up just before dinner. We walked through historic Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. We visited safe houses and homes of freedom seekers who resettled in the area. We walked through all of northern Delaware. We actually got to see the original 1700s landmark sign that freedom seekers saw. Maybe they touched, maybe they kissed it to see that this is the marker that shows that I'm leaving the state of enslavement and going to freedom. Like, whew, powerful. And so along the way, we sang, we prayed, I told stories. Two of my friends are from different countries. And so they had, different experiences in terms of colonialism. So Daphne was from Haiti and Faith is from Kenya. And so, you know, they were sharing just some of the experiences that they've had in within the African diaspora, which sometimes we leave out of the narrative, but it is a very important part. And so it was just a really unique bonding event. We had gifts. I gave them surprise gifts all along the way that tied into the story. For example, I don't know if you know this, but Harriet Tubman used to make root beer, homemade root beer and ginger cakes. They didn't pay her to be a nurse in the Civil War. And she was like, I got to eat. So Harriet came up with this great idea on how she could make some money. And so that was one of the treats that I gave along the way. And then at the end of one of the days, I gave them handmade chestnut beaded bracelets, which were similar. They were like replicas of what enslaved women made during times of celebration.
Wow.
And represented the mileage that we did that day. And so these UGR treats really were what helped to make the experience. You know, the first day we were empowered. We were like, yeah, we're going to retrace our ancestors' roots. Nobody complained about the mileage. Day two, we ate dinner across from a place where freedom seekers who were caught were imprisoned. So like everything that we did that weekend was tied somehow into the underground. So it was like a very immersive experience.
Right, right.
Even where we stayed, you know, sometimes freedom seekers would stay in a farmhouse along the way to freedom. So we rented a farmhouse mansion and stayed there. Ours was souped up. We did have a jacuzzi and we had an African-American personal chef. But you know, after all those miles, we needed that. We needed that.
Nice.
But the cool thing was the underground station was, well, I'm calling it a station. It was our station, but this farmhouse was nestled in the heart of the Underground Railroad. So all around us were freedom roots. So as we woke up in the morning and we saw the sun rising over these great big hills, we were like, this is the same sun and this is the same way that mm-hmm. they saw it. Mm-hmm. Day two, we were sore. People were starting to get a little edgy, you know, and I'll tell on myself, I was so busy taking care of everyone else and trying to make the experience so great for everyone. I just literally forgot to drink.
Oh, wow.
You can't do that when you're doing that type of mileage. So I was dehydrated and it brought on a really bad migraine that literally took my vision. I couldn't, it was, everything was so dark and distorted that I couldn't see the steps in front of me.
Oh, wow.
And I'm trying not to get emotional thinking about it. My sister friend Crystal said, just hold on to me. I got you. Oh. And so we literally, during that time, I held onto her arm and just had to just trust. I just had to trust her that she was going to make sure that I didn't go in the road and make sure, you know, that I was safe and, you know, those kinds of things.
Wow.
Although the experience was different, of course, from what freedom seekers experience, it gives you a little bit of a taste because they got hurt while they were traveling. They got sick.
Mm-hmm.
And they, those who were fortunate enough to travel with a group, they had to rely on each other.
Right.
As you were sharing that, that's exactly what I felt like. That was a spiritual moment, a little bit of discomfort for you, a lot of discomfort and being afraid, but it was still a spiritual moment and one that you get to share with us and our listeners. And like you said, it was a little bit, but imagine what they went through. I call this walking where they walked, that you are actually, you're doing that. And what I'm hoping this segment does, it is inspires people to research your family history, number one. And then number two, look at your local history. What's there?
Right.
You know, do you have an underground railroad in your community that you don't even know about? If you went to ask someone, a historical society or somebody at the library, or just did some research, that you may never know what's in your backyard, your own backyard.
That's right.
So, I'm sorry, you can continue. I just felt that when you were talking about it.
Oh, no, I'm glad you shared. I mean, that's what it's all about. You want people to feel and connect because a lot of times history, I didn't like history growing up because I felt like it was so intangible and I didn't see myself in it. Mm-hmm. And so this whole conversation that we're having is really connecting the dots. And I hope that it will pique other people's interest. You know, it's not a Black experience. It's for everybody. Mm-hmm. The underground was a very inclusive network. And history is something that, like complete history, everyone should know.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I had one sister friend, her name is Cherie, and she had injured herself prior to the event, but she told her doctor, I'm still walking. So she walked 52 miles with a broken ankle.
What? Wow.
52 miles. And she didn't complain one time. And she was in by day three, we all were like sore and like, oh gosh, every mile was a push, you know, but we ended up stopping a lot more. There were a lot more questions like, what mile are we? Are we almost there yet? And then I'm like, is this what Harriet went through? You know, but by the time we got to our finished location, we were all so overwhelmed with emotion. There were tears, there were shouts of praise. A couple of people just broke into prayer. It was just an enormous experience that touched us on so many different levels. And so I wanted to be able to offer that, whether it's in a 1 mile walk or, you know, whether it's in a seminar or workshop, I want other people to be able to have a taste of that experience.
I'm thinking of one of our guests, Charles Holman was on, and he had his own personal Harriet Tubman. And so one of his great grandmothers, I forget the number, she would go back and forth from, well, she was in Kansas. I want to say it wasn't Kentucky, Shere Khan, wasn't it? I believe it was Kansas or Kentucky.
Right.
She went back and forth going to get her relatives,
yep.
or relatives, I think strictly relatives, but going mm-hmm. back and forth from wow. Kansas to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
What? And it made me yep. think of how many other Harriet Tubmans are out there that we don't even know about.
Right.
How many other Underground Railroad experiences are out there, or stories that need to be researched, documented, and shared. And so that's why we were so inspired with you, that you're doing this. You're making history real. You're walking yes. where yes. they walked or where they ran. And that is very, very powerful. And it is spiritual. And you do feel it when you talk about it, or when you're walking, again, when you're walking, or as Shara kind of shared when she went to Africa, feeling that presence. We own a home in South Carolina. And I remember when we first purchased the property, and everybody was so excited and happy about it. And my mm-hmm. husband would say, are you getting out of the car? And I was like, no. And he said, why? I said, I just have this really weird feeling, but I'm fine. You know, you guys go ahead. So mm-hmm. we closed on the property, bought the property, everything, but going back and forth to fix it. But I never felt comfortable. Every time we drove by this tree, I just felt mm-hmm. so uncomfortable and sad. So mm-hmm. one day I said, you know what? I bet they lynched people from that tree. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why I feel the way I do. And I'm the only one that feels it, because I'm the one that's from South Carolina. My husband is from New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And once I said that, I never had that feeling again. And then mm-hmm. as I continued to do my family research, I realized that the property that we purchased is land where my ancestors were enslaved.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Wow.
So to have that, it is spiritual. Dr. Evelyn McDowell says that all the time, that this work that we do is spiritual. And when I saw what you were doing, it just resonated with me. And I was like, that is so powerful what mm-hmm. you're doing. You can read and research about the Underground Railroad, but then when you actually right. have an experience and you participate, it right. takes on a whole new meaning. Another point that you made, you said you weren't really into history as a child. For me, it was the opposite, that I was in history, but I didn't connect with it. I didn't think mm-hmm. it had anything to do with me, because I didn't know my family history. Right. Didn't know. But once, as much as I loved history, once I started doing the research and was able to connect my family with that historical timeline, oh, it was on.
The different ball game.
Different yeah. feeling, different. Yep. Different everything. And so
yeah,
that's what Shara Khan and I try to, you know, encourage people to do. Listen, it's our history. It's a shared history. Right. Black history is American history. I mean,
right. that's right.
We were always there. Revolutionary War,
always.
War of yes. 1812, the Civil War. And to see my right. ancestors in those records. And mm-hmm. so with my family, I encourage them and remind them, listen, when your children go to school, let them know everything that you're learning in history, your family was there. Your ancestors yes. were there.
That's right.
So that was just so powerful when you said that. Well, Dee, please share some parting words of inspiration to our listeners.
So I think that if I look at the theme behind all the stories of freedom, there's a message for us today. And I think that message is to stay strong, be bold, be brave, and don't let your lack of resources be an excuse for you not reaching your personal place of liberty, whatever that place is.
That's right.
Personal place of liberty. Got it.
I love okay. that. Well, Dee, thank you so much for sharing with us and our listeners. You can find Dee on Facebook at facebook.com/UGR3Day and online at www.UGR3Day.com. We thank you for joining us, and we look forward to sharing with you during our next segment of Speak On It.
Speak thank On you. It is a podcast and is immediately available to listen to at your leisure. Thank you. And Dee, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.